Welcome to this portion of Focal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is presidential historian Doug Weed. He's written a new book called Inside Trump's White House. His website is DougWeed.com. Weed is spelled W-E-A-D, and he even has a specific website for the book, InsideTrumpsWhiteHouse.com, no apostrophe before the S. Doug Weed, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Sure. And you, as a presidential historian, I think I first remembered you from having written a book about Ronald Reagan, and then I believe you wrote a book about George Bush. I'm not sure which one, but you, would it be fair to call you a presidential historian? I know you're a journalist.
Well, I call myself a student of history.
Okay.
But I have interviewed 6 American presidents, and I've interviewed more members of the presidential family than anyone who's ever lived.
Oh, wow.
I wrote a book called All the President's Children. When I sat down with Ivanka Trump, that was my 24th child of a president to interview.
Oh.
And I served on staff with George H.W. Bush, and I co-authored a book with him and wrote President Reagan's campaign biography, as you mentioned. So I've been hanging around the Oval Office for a long time.
Sure. And when you say his campaign biography, that's what I remember then. In other words, when he was first running for president, or I should say in the 1980, not the first time, but when he was running for president, your book about him was what the campaign officially released. That's a high honor.
Yeah, it's not a great book, but it had to be done so quickly. But this book, Inside Trump's WhiteHouse.com, it's amazing because it's all of the family members and the president opening up. So I had read all those books from anonymous sources, and I had so many questions. I thought, doesn't anybody go on the record anymore these days?
Wow.
So it was wonderful to be able to get in there and get the true stories, and they're much more interesting than the fake stories.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting because the image that's presented, in fact, you mentioned anonymous books. Wasn't there one just a week or two ago, and it made some outrageous claims, but I guess it's like you say, it's all based on anonymous sources. Even the author is unknown at this point. I forgot even the name of it. It hit the news, and then it was sort of, you know, and then it was gone. This man, though, has not gotten a fair shake. I mean, for example, I used to subscribe to Time Magazine. If you look at some of the covers of Time Magazine in reference to Donald Trump, they're outrageous. They're outrageous. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, outwardly, when you interview them and talk to them, they will always say, if you sympathize with them, if you say, I'm so sorry all that you're going through, they'll say, it's a privilege to serve our country. Don't worry about us. We're doing fine. Thank you very much. We're patriots. But inwardly, they know what a horror show this has been. Sometimes at dinner time, the president with puffed up importance will say, Melania, honey, isn't this great, this adventure I'm taking you on, the first lady, you'd have never had this without me. And she'll say, oh yeah, thank you very much. Sure, thank you very much. It's hilarious. So
you mean
so
being sarcastic?
Yes, being sarcastic. They know what they're going through and that it's unprecedented and they didn't have to do it. But this president, he just was so frustrated as a citizen. Ivanka remembers as a little girl curled up under his desk, and he'd go through the New York Times and he'd rip out pages and underline things. He was just so frustrated. He thought someone else would finally come along and fix all these things that he sees as obvious, and nobody did. So he stepped forward.
That's interesting. How much time did you actually get to spend with him for this book?
Well, I had 3 conversations with him, one very extensive interview. We had lunch together in his private dining room in the Oval Office. And but a lot of the quotes have been most interesting stories about him came from the kids, from Jared and Ivanka or Eric and Lara or Don Jr., Tiffany. They're just fascinating. And the president, it was so nice. He opened up the whole administration for me. I talked to hostages that had been freed back from other countries. I talked to Chief of Staff Mulvaney and to ambassadors from other countries. And it was just a fascinating journey inside Trump's White House.
Huh. Now, the way the media, you know, gives you the impression that there's just like complete chaos and there have been a lot of, you know, staff turnover and things like that. What did you find when you visited the White House?
Well, I found calculation in that. I suspected that I would find some of that going in because I had served on senior staff in the White House, and I remembered very well that a lot of the stories they thought on the outside were accidental, had been highly calculated. So I suspected some of that was going on. But even with my experience, it took my breath away to learn how calculated so much of this is. Years ago, thousands of years ago, Sun Tzu, the philosopher and military genius, he said that out of chaos comes opportunity. And I saw that so clearly in the Trump White House. The best one good example is NATO. When he said, what's going on with NATO? They're not paying their bills. They sign this treaty. They say they'll do this percent, we'll do this percent, but we're having to do everything. What kind of treaty is that? Why do we need NATO? And the media went crazy and the generals went crazy. The Pentagon, they'd sit with him in the Oval Office and they'd say, but these are our friends. Sir, these are our friends. He'd say, what kind of friend makes a promise and doesn't keep it? What kind of friend makes you pay for the meal every time you go out to eat? That's not friendship. That's total dependency. But they're our friends, sir. We need them. So it was chaos, and he stirred it up. But so help me, the NATO nations have raised $100 billion. Keep in mind, Trump only wants $1.6 billion to build a wall with Mexico. The NATO nations have raised $100 billion. They're now paying their fair share, and it is much stronger than it's ever been, and the future president, whoever it may be, will never reverse what Donald Trump has successfully done.
What are your thoughts in terms of Donald Trump and tariffs with China? And I know that some farmers have been upset because it hurts them in their pocketbook and so forth, and it's a frustrating time. But your comments on China and Trump?
Well, they were very upset at first. Since then, of course, he's using money to reimburse the farmers while they have to wait this out. But he knows he's going to take a hit with China, but it had to be done. You hear Elizabeth Warren talking about billionaires. We got to soak the billionaires. Well, the billionaires voted 20-1 for the Democrats in 2016. They like regulation because that's what creates monopolies. So a billionaire would rather we have huge regulations, not be energy independent, multinational corporations. That's where they make their money, and it's all related to China. It all goes back to China. Academia goes back to China. The only students who are paying full fare at Harvard are Chinese students. And Elizabeth Warren, of course, she wants free education because she wants the government to pay for these kids going to Harvard. Harvard has, for example, $37 billion endowment. They pay Elizabeth Warren $350,000 to teach one class at Harvard University. She's worth $18 million, and she says we need to soak the billionaires. Well, great, let's do it. But don't act like that's somebody other than the people who you support and have supported you and the establishment that has been milking this country for the last 16 years with two presidents, Obama and Bush.
Wow. What are your thoughts in terms of Trump as far as his character? In some quarters, he comes off as proud or even arrogant. But on the other side, you know, maybe he's more humble. I don't know. What are your thoughts? You've seen him personally.
Well, he's a great personality. He's very, very funny. So I think sometimes that's missed. But yes, he's a New Yorker. He has an outrageous personality. He's a deeply religious man.
Comment on the religion of.
Well, his dad took him to that collegiate Presbyterian church.
Okay,
Norman Vincent Peale. And he loved Norman Vincent Peale. He was heartbroken when Norman Vincent Peale died. He loved him as a young man. He was a teenager when he would go to that church and hear those sermons. And when Norman Vincent Peale died, he was at a loss. He couldn't then go out into public a lot. I've had friends that tell me occasionally I'll show up at a church in public, but it was hard for him because he was a celebrity and he'd disrupt the service. So he started watching television, and he watched preachers on television. He watched all of them. He watched Jimmy Swaggart. I said, "You watch Jimmy Swaggart?" Yes, he loved Jimmy Swaggart. He said, "I could never get a crying bit. I don't understand that. I don't know why they cry like that." But
let me ask you a question. Did he ever mention D. James Kennedy? I've worked for the D. James Kennedy Ministry Television for 35 years now, just about. Did he ever mention Dr. Kennedy on TV, if you ever happened to see him?
He never mentioned that name, but he mentioned in Fort Lauderdale, so it must have been Kennedy. Some of the people I interviewed in the book said that on one Sunday, he went into this church in Fort Lauderdale, and he grabbed a wad of $20 bills, and when the offering came, he started passing this money around to everybody around it, saying, "You got to put something in the offering. You can't do that. Everybody's got to put something in the offering." So he was passing out these $20 bills, telling people to put it into the offering plate. So he's very almost, I don't know, superstitious about his faith. He had, what's her name, Paula White. He had her fly up when he was, this was 19 years ago, when he was doing The Apprentice. He had her fly up and he wanted her to personally pray for every single member of the cast. So they took about an hour before they started shooting, and he insisted that they pray for every one of these members of his staff. So he has a very childlike faith in God. Of course, Jared and Ivanka are Jewish, and when they moved into the White House, they stayed in the Lincoln bedroom, and that Friday night they celebrated the Sabbath, the first time the candles were ever lit in the White House for Jared and Ivanka.
Wow, interesting. What are your thoughts about the impeachment inquiry?
Well, as a historian, I have to tell you, the whole Russian collusion thing, in my humble opinion, almost inoculates him against impeachment. He will probably be impeached, but instead of it being the black eye that it should be for history, because of Russian collusion, historians are going to look very skeptically at it. I mean, the Democrats haven't even stopped to apologize over Russian collusion. They haven't said, "Look, we got that wrong. We're very sorry about that. But this new one, this one is really, really real. We mean this one. It's serious." Instead, they just haven't skipped a beat. They've gotten right on. And Russian collusion, I have to tell you, the Trump kids traveled all over the world. And from time to time, a head of state would pull them into their office and they'd say, "Please, when you get home, tell your dad how sorry we are he's going through this Russian collusion nonsense." And when I heard those stories, I thought, well, of course, if you're the prime minister of England, or you're the president of France, or you're the prime minister of Israel, or you're a dictator in Iran, you can't wait for 2 years for the Mueller report to come in. If you're Benjamin Netanyahu, you pick up the phone, you call Mossad, and you say, "What in the heck is going on? What is the New York Times? What is this? I've known the Trumps all my life. Now, I want an answer on this by 6 o'clock tonight." because every country has to deal with the United States for military security, for the economy. If they're dealing with a Russian agent, they got to know. There's 120 intelligence services, and they all figured it out within a few hours. And it revealed more about the New York Times and CNN than it ever did about Donald Trump. So I think this impeachment business is going to be looked at by many historians. They'll go right to Russian collusion. They'll say, wait a second. Was he, you're telling me he was a Russian spy? If that's true, that's one of the greatest events of history. That ranks with landing a man on the moon, Columbus's voyage. You're telling me the Russians were able to recruit this spy, and then they had him modernize his nuclear deterrent, and they had him increase the military budget, and they had him put more Russian oligarchs sanctions against them. Why did he do all of these things? What were the Russians up to? And of course, it's ridiculous.
All right, we're out of time, but thank you so much for joining us. I want to give the websites again: Doug Weed, WEAD.com, and also Inside Trump's, no apostrophe, WhiteHouse.com. Thank you, Doug. All the best.
Thank you very much.
Okay, great. Thanks. Bye-bye.